ever thought of the concept of personal space? We have a feeling that the space around us belongs to us when we occupy it. Different cultures have different feelings on this, but most cultures acknowledge the concept of personal space. Hey, this is my space. I'm standing here. You can't just walk into me. You can't just stand right next to me. You can't just put your face in my face unless, of course, I give permission for all of those things. Those are the things that we feel. We feel that people cannot and should not violate our personal space. And if they do, we feel that it's wrong. We also feel this way about our homes. If someone just walked into your home who didn't belong there, you might just call the police and have them escorted out. So we feel that we have space that belongs to us, whether in our personal space, wherever we happen to be standing in the world, or in our homes. We also acknowledge the idea of everyone else having their own personal space, wherever they happen to be standing or sitting in the world, and their homes. And we feel uneasy if someone violates our personal space. This concept of personal space allows us to feel comfortable. It allows us to feel at ease. It allows us to feel as if we have a little bit of freedom and we have this room in which we can move around and we will be respected in that personal space. Now, when you go to someone else's personal space, let's say you go to their home or some territory which they control, let's say they're the boss of somewhere or it's their home, or somehow they are in charge of the area you are in, your body language will actually change. If you are in your place, let's say you're in your home, that's your home, your body language will be more dominant. If you are in somebody else's home, your body language will be more submissive. And that works for all of us. When we're in our own homes, we feel in charge because we are. And when we're in someone else's home, we feel submissive because we are, because they are in charge. So this concept of us having space around us that we control is very interesting. And we have these understood ways of dealing with that. We have rules that really aren't stated out loud, but are strongly implied. Some of them have become laws and are in law books. For example, breaking and entering. That's illegal. If you don't have permission to be there, you could get arrested. I want to introduce you to another way of looking at this, which I think really allows for a lot of detail and allows for a lot of analysis and allows for a lot of insight, and hopefully you'll gain quite a bit from it. There's another American anthropologist that I want to introduce you to, and his name is Edward T. Hall. Edward T. Hall wrote a book called The Hidden Dimension, and in it, he talks about what he calls proxemics, proxemics, and that is the study of the space that humans occupy in the context of their culture. So different cultures look at space different ways. Culture will define how much space is enough and when you're too close to someone. And interestingly enough, Hall was able to analyze how people interact with each other to such a degree that he was able to take measurements and determine that your relationship with someone else will specify how close they're allowed to get. So at the farthest out fringes of social interaction, we have what he calls the public category. And this would be 12 feet, or if you're using the metric system, it would be about 3.6 meters. Let's say you're addressing an audience of people. Let's say a group of people came to hear you talk, give a speech. The distance between you and the first row of listeners is what he would define as the public space. If someone violates that space, if someone tries to close that gap, you feel violated. But if someone is further away than that, then you feel a distance. So the people in the back row, it's a little difficult to communicate with them in a connected way because they're so far away. So about 12 feet would be optimal. That's not too close, not too far. That's the public space. The social space is 4 to 6 feet, or about 1.2 to 3.6 meters, according to his exact measurements. Now, this is the distance that you would be from someone in more of a business transaction or a business interaction. If you're closer than this to the person, they're going to feel uneasy. If you're further away than this from the person, they're going to feel as if you're rude or you're standoffish or you're really not connected to them. The next category is personal space. This is about 45 centimeters to 1.2 meters, or 18 inches to 4 feet. This is when you're having a personal conversation with someone. You're standing talking with them. Let's say you go outside and you're talking to a neighbor. They would expect you to be 18 inches to 4 feet from them. Any closer is too close. Any further away is too far away. Now, the intimate space, 6 to 18 inches or 15 to 45 centimeters. This is for lovers, for relatives, for friends. But if someone you don't know or a stranger tries to enter this zone, you don't feel so good about that. What about close intimate space? This is 0 to 6 inches. And when I say 0, I mean you're right on the person or pressed against them. 0 to 6 inches or 0 to 15 centimeters. This is obviously for very close friends or lovers or family members. And it's a position of generally very intimate behaviors. Kissing, embracing, touching, and so forth. So keep these in mind. You may want to go back and listen to the section again to get the measurements. Keep these in mind. If you want people to feel comfortable with you, realize which situation you're in and stand at the appropriate distance from them or sit at the appropriate distance from them. Realize anything beyond that in either direction is not exactly going to be optimal for you. So this whole idea of intimate space gets us to the idea of dating, the idea of going out with someone, the idea of having a relationship. Did you know that when it comes to heterosexual interactions, meaning a man and a woman, usually the woman makes the first move? Did you know that? Isn't that fascinating? Men always think that they have to be dominating and in charge and so forth, but the woman is going out of her way to make the first move 90% of the time. However, this is usually done in a way that's, well, not really that obvious. And men, unfortunately, aren't the best at picking up on the signals of women, especially women they don't know. Because we're talking about someone they really don't know that well yet, and hopefully they'll get to know a little better. But when the woman first makes the signals of being interested, well, they can go right past the man. So it requires the signal to be sent, the signal to be received, and the signal to be sent back. And once this volley is going, then you have a relationship developing, or at least a conversation. And interestingly enough, signals equal relationships. Now, you may think, well, okay, that just makes sense. But think about it. Let's delve a little more deeply into that. Women who give off signals, since 90% of the time they're the ones initiating things, women who give off signals are more likely to find themselves in a relationship than women who don't. Where does that leave the women who don't give off signals? Well, it doesn't leave them in a very good place if they're interested in having a relationship, since 90% of the time the woman is initiating things. If a woman is not initiating things, maybe nothing will happen. So women who carry the idea of, well, the man makes the first move, the man's in charge, are missing out, because that is really not the way it works. According to research, men are more likely to go after women who show signs of being available. In other words, they initiate things. They show those signs, those subtle signals. Men are more likely to go after women who do that than women who don't, even when the women who don't are more attractive. Isn't that interesting? Why is that? Well, no man wants to be shot down. They're waiting for a signal. They're waiting for some sign, smoke signal, anything. As long as the signal is interpreted by the man, it doesn't take much. And then he can reciprocate, and then the woman can reciprocate, and a relationship can bloom. So let's take our attention now to an interview process. Let's move out of dating and talk about something that's actually very related to that. Because an interview process is almost like a courting process. You are trying to get the interest of the employer. It's a completely different result. It's for a completely different reason, but the essential concepts are the same. So let's talk about what could contribute to a successful interview. First of all, just realizing that you belong there. If you're at the interview, you belong there. So it's not a situation in which you should be completely submissive. Yes, you should be submissive to some degree to the employer or potential employer. You need to make sure that your presence is known and that you're standing tall or sitting tall, chin up, smiling, shoulders back, and making sure that it's understood that you are confident. When you move, you should move with precise steps. No wasted motion. Know where you're going and go there. When you shake hands, you're making eye contact with the person, you're shaking their hand firmly, and you're smiling. You should lean forward slightly in your seat if you're seated. This is going to show eagerness and the fact that you're in control. However, you're still calm, so you're not showing anxiety. When you leave the same way you came in, with steps that make sense. You just walk to where you're going. There's no wasted effort, there's no wasted energy. You smile, you shake hands, and you leave. When you're talking, minimize your gestures. You know, this is one of the challenges for me because when I talk, I have a tendency to use my hands a lot and I like to make a lot of gestures. Luckily, I'm not interviewing for a job anytime soon, but I like to make gestures that are sometimes really big with my hands. If I were to find myself in a job interview situation, I would minimize that. I would only make gestures that I had to make. Now, as I mentioned, different cultures have different ways of looking at things. They have different ways of looking at personal space. They also have different ways of looking at body language in general. Have you ever noticed that people of different cultures act differently around you than people of your own culture? They have different ways of interacting. Maybe you are unable to put your finger on it precisely, but you know that they're acting differently. Well, start paying attention to their body language, because some cultures are more touchy-feely. They like to touch you, put their hands on you. Some cultures are more standoffish. In the Middle East, for example, touching is common. You wait for the other person to initiate it, but touching is fine and common and expected. Some cultures exchange kisses on alternating cheeks. Women in Brazil do this, for example. In France, women will kiss you on the cheeks. Doesn't mean they're in love with you. It's just their way of doing things. It's their way of interacting. So rather than giving you a complete list of everywhere I've been and everything I've learned and everything you should do in every place, I suggest that when you go to a place, start looking around and see how people act. Because the biggest difference, the way you're going to get picked out as a tourist if you don't pay attention, the biggest difference is body language. They do things a certain way. And you, if you want to fit in and establish rapport, should do things the way they are doing them and not do things the way they're not doing them. So whichever country you're from, let go of what you might bring to the table and just watch what everyone else is doing. Start doing what they're doing, the way they're doing it. And by the way, I remember teaching in Japan, and one of the interesting things in Japan is that they really don't like handshaking. They do that for people like myself from America. They realize that Americans like to shake hands, but Japanese would really rather not. I didn't know this until after I had taught a seminar, until after I had taught a bunch of doctors how to hypnotize their patients and perform hypnotherapy techniques, and after I'd shaken each of their hands. Then I found out. It didn't occur to me. Why? Because I didn't see anyone shaking hands, so the whole handshaking thing didn't even occur to me. It just went right by me. I didn't see anyone saying, "Oh no, I won't shake your hand." I didn't observe any handshaking, but I didn't miss it. I didn't think about it. I didn't think that something's missing here. So pay careful attention. What do Japanese like to do? Well, they like to bow. They like to bow. I didn't realize that they prefer to bow over a handshake. I thought bowing was something ancient. Turns out it's not. So now you understand more about territories that people have, their boundaries, about dating rituals, about interviewing properly, and you understand more about how various cultures view body language. What I want you to do, of course, is start putting these things to practice. Start using them where they apply in your life. Now, there's certainly something you've learned from this module, isn't there? I want to make sure you're with me. I want to make sure you're paying attention and learning things. So what I want you to do, you know the drill. I want you to take out a pen and paper, as long as you're not driving, take out a pen and paper, or you can do this on your computer if you want to. Doesn't matter. Write it on the wall if you want to. I want you to write five things that either I said to you that resonated with you, or five things that just came to you, or a combination of both. As I'm silent, write down five things that you thought of, whether I said them or you thought them, write down five things that you thought of so far in this module. Do this now as I'm silent. Good. Now, I want you to elaborate on those. I want you to elaborate on point number one. Do that now as I'm silent. Good. Now, point number two. What was point number two? Something that either I said or that came to you while you're listening to this module, something that came to you that really resonated with you. I want you to elaborate on that now. Give it a plan. Give it some feeling. If it's something like, I think I should change my life in this way, well, how are you going to change your life in that way? Go ahead and elaborate on it now as I'm silent. Good. Now take point number three, and I want you to elaborate on that now as I'm silent. Point number three, fill it in. Good. Now, point number four. Go ahead and elaborate on point number four as I'm silent. All right, and the final point, point number five, the thing that came to you, that thing that came to you while I was talking, go ahead and elaborate on it. Point number five, you've already done one through four, five will be easy for you. Go ahead and elaborate on it now. Give some feeling to it, give some plan to it, give something to it. Write a sentence or a paragraph or something that really tells what point number five is all about. It's a thought that came to you while I was talking. So fill it in, elaborate on it as I am silent. good. All right, you've got a lot of information in your mind now. A lot of information that's come to you, a lot of information you've heard from me. There's a lot going on in your mind. Why don't we take a moment now, make sure you're not driving during this. If you're driving, don't listen to this part. Do this part later. But if you're not driving, what I want you to do is close your eyes and let all those thoughts come to you, all those thoughts that are floating around in your head, let them come to you now. And I want you to start seeing them become organized. And I want you to start seeing them happening in your life. I want you to see them playing themselves out in your life somehow. All these ideas you have, I want you to find a place for them in your mind, whether in terms of a plan, or in terms of changing something about yourself immediately, or in terms of, it could even be a vacation you're thinking of taking. But those ideas that are coming to you now as a result of listening to this material, what I want you to do with them right now, I don't want you to write anything right now. I don't want you to overthink anything. I just want you to close your eyes, as long as you're not driving. I want you to close your eyes. And as I'm silent, just use your imagination and let your imagination run wild. See where these ideas will take you. Let these ideas float around in your mind as I'm silent and really let them play out. Just let them go wild in your mind. See where they take you. As I'm silent, do this now. right? Did you enjoy that? Now, probably what happened is initially when you closed your eyes, you thought of a bunch of random thoughts and they didn't make any sense. Maybe some things were coming in that really didn't fit there. Sometimes when I close my eyes, I see all kinds of interesting images that don't have anything to do with what I'm talking about or listening to. But hopefully, after a little while, those images kind of settled down and meaningful images started to show up. Like, aha, that business idea I had, or that vacation I had, or that person I need to tell something to, or something started to develop, or maybe a series of things. When you let your imagination run wild, you often come up with ideas that you will not access if you're beating your head against the wall, if you're trying to figure something out. That's not as effective usually as just letting your mind run wild, because eventually your mind is going to settle down and is going to start giving you information that you can actually use. So I hope you use this exercise not only in this program, but outside of it as well.